Chus, good evening.
Hey, man.
Hey. So we talked last week that we were going to mention Google I.O., and that is what we are going to do. So why don't you set this up for us? Tell us what we're going to talk about today.
There's a whole bunch of topics that we could talk about, but I think we have to
No, there's not. There's only one important topic.
Yeah, which is Google Duplex. Yes. So I wanted to start this one off because I saw the reactions of people after seeing the tech demo of Google Duplex on stage. For the people who haven't seen it yet, Google showed off a technology in which Google Assistant goes off and makes a phone call for you to a hairdresser or a restaurant to make an appointment or to order food in. So it is becoming like a real assistant that can place phone calls for you. And what was special about it is that you could listen to the phone call to both parties, and it sounded like a phone call between two people, where the Google Assistant even said things like mm-hmm, or and aha, and it sounded super natural on the stage. And of course, everybody at the conference was giving a big applause, but already a couple of hours later, there were lots of posts on the web where people were basically scared of the technology, and they were angry at Google for basically not letting the assistant declare that it was a Google Assistant and that it was there for a robocall.
Just to clarify that, where the anxiety it felt like came from is that there was no declaration at all. Like you often see that you are talking to a bot or not a real person. And so this gets into that problem that you are blending basically computers and people.
Yeah, and exactly.
That made a lot of people anxious.
Yeah, and people are writing in this tone that they are offended by what Google did and that there have to be rules. And like, yeah, I get this anxiety, but we also have to keep in mind that it's a tech demo. And Google spent the first 10, 15 minutes of the conference saying that, basically saying with great tech capabilities comes great responsibility. We want to talk about ethics. And everybody threw that out of the window in a moment. They showed off their first really, really good tech demo that nobody has ever shown off. So I just want to say that it's like getting angry at, what are they called again? The robot
Boston
guys.
Boston Dynamics.
Yeah.
Boston Dynamics.
Yeah, getting angry at Boston Dynamics for having a robot that can take a stroll in the park. Well, until that robot has a gun or something scary on it, I'm not going to get angry at them for showing off that they're amazing at their technology. We just almost always seem to... We see a product when they're actually demonstrating in technology, and I want us to keep that straight. But I think in this episode, we can talk a little bit about the design of such things and what we have to take into account and what becomes possible for designers that are going to work on these technologies, right, Joe?
Well, yeah, but I want to back up and unpack two different things that you mentioned there. Mm-hmm. And the first one is that what they were showing off was a tool, and what Boston Dynamics has with their robots are tools, and that there is no inherent, you know, good or evil when it comes to a tool. It is how it is put to use.
Exactly.
So I think that's a little bit of what we're getting at here, that people immediately jump to negative conclusions when they see this. And that may not be the wrong conclusion to jump to, you know, but also I have to go back and in our past, you know, month of conversations when we've been talking about Facebook and privacy, there's all these situations where the people who are creating Facebook probably have a very positive idea of what they want to do. They want to connect people. They want to create meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. However, out of that, because you have so many people on it, you are also going to get people using this tool in an inherently negative way. So yeah. I do understand both sides, that when you see something like this happen, all of a sudden it becomes this anxiety-inducing incident because you are now conditioned, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, that all the negativity that's coming from those pieces, that you can immediately see, oh, here are the negative parts mm-hmm. that are going to happen here. So that's one part, is that it's a tool. The second part that you mentioned is something else we've talked about here, which is, should there be guidelines or, you know, ethical guidelines or some type of robot-human guidelines like the iRobot 3 rules, that govern these types of interactions, right? So the first part, if I unpack what you said, is it's a tool. The second part is, you know, should or shouldn't there be some sort of regulatory body or regulation or guidelines around how we interact with these two things being actual humans and robots, because it is becoming a situation where they are indistinguishable.
Yeah, and I actually recently read about a big lawsuit where a guy got sentenced to a very big fine for running a network of robocall operators. I don't know what they call them. Robocall robots?
You can say operators. I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So this guy was running this kind of advertisement scheme using a robocall mechanism, and he got sentenced to a very big fine because it's been declared illegal. So that's not that far away from what Google is showing us in a way. So I'm not worried about there being legislation later. That will come. I just think that besides rules, I think you should, as a company, impose your own rules, because every time you sort of break your own ethical framework, or at least break the ethical expectations of your potential customers, you're losing trust. And at some moment, there's no trust to be won back anymore, and they just move on to different companies.
Oh, very good point. So let's talk a little bit about where you're going to go after that introduction, which is, what does this mean for designers? Right, here is a completely new product, a completely new interface, or, you know, method of interface. And what does this mean for us, me, you, Raft, anybody listening here who calls themselves a designer yet probably doesn't know the first thing about how to create a product like Google Assistant?
Yeah. So first of all, if we go straight onto Google Duplex and not as broad as the Google Assistant, what I think that Google has created is it's an API for human communication, where basically normally when you as a company sell out capabilities that other digital companies can use, so Google Maps has an API for navigation, where your application can send a request to Google for planning a route, and then it gets it back from Google. So it's a way of two computers to talk to each other to exchange information. Except in this case, what Google did is it allowed for small businesses that do not have an online reservation tool to still be used by a computer as if they have their own reservation tool, except now they're using the person in that business, which is also where I kind of think that people got offended by, because it's unannounced. That's the thing that kind of makes it unfair. But if we can step over that, I think there's now a digital API for offline services, phone calls. And I think designing for that is already quite a complex thing if you think about it.
Well, here's my... Okay, I'm just going to go, and then we're going to see where I'm going to stop on this.
Do it.
Ooh, monologue time. Okay, so this has been an ongoing conversation that we've had at Raft for some time. And last November, I got the chance to go to a conference and meet the founder of X.AI. And for those of you who are not familiar with X.AI, it is a digital email assistant which helps you schedule meetings. So they have two assistants, Amy and Andrew, and Amy and Andrew basically help somebody find a time to schedule on their calendar. One of the funny things here is that they've done such a nice job in the language and the way that it's approached that many people don't realize they are talking to a bot. So, Chus, to your point, there is no, you know, hi, I'm Amy, I'm an automatic scheduling bot. It's just Amy, or it's just Andrew. Mm-hmm. Right? And so when I asked him, I said, okay, you know, is design important in what you do? Because the only real design you have is emails. And he said, oh, no, it's absolutely critical. So I said, well, you know, how did you find a designer who could do this? And his response was they went and hired a drama major out of Harvard. It is not a designer as any of us would think about it, not an interaction designer, not a visual designer, not a service designer, not a design researcher, but he classified it as design, but yet got an actress. And at that moment, there were so many things that just sort of flooded into my brain about how design as a discipline is changing. And this has been something that has been a reoccurring theme in Raft, and we've talked about it lightly on the podcast. For so many screen-based designs, websites, applications on your mobile phone, on your desktop, on your tablet, there are plenty of patterns and elements and components that are available, almost to the point that you can plug and play an application, you can plug and play a website. Mm-hmm. And so now what happens as designers need to move forward? Where do we need to go? And one of the conversations that I've had so many times when we look to hire a visual designer is I ask them, what happens? How do you look at visual design when it's a bot or when it's a digital assistant or when it's something like Amazon Echo or Google Home, where they don't have the traditional visual assets? And what I look for here is a conversation that really talks about the abstraction of visual design as a moment to emotionally represent a brand, right? There is a way that you convey an experience, a feeling, I'm missing my synonyms here, mm-hmm. But hopefully this is coming across, of a brand. And so when I think about what does visual design mean when you look at these other areas, I tend to think of it as emotional design, right? If I step back and say, what's the goal of visual design is to, you know, communicate a brand in a certain way. Well, it's the same thing when I look at what is the goal of language or what is the goal of tone of voice or the way that somebody speaks. It is an expression of a brand that is supposed to connect to a person. So in that case, I hope that something like visual design evolves into emotional design, where visual designers are thinking from this abstract level about how they convey information from a brand. And then interaction design, you know, maybe that can move into service design. I'm not really sure, but I certainly believe that interaction design as we know it, meaning designing boxes on a screen, is going away, right? Yeah. Either it is being outsourced or it is being automatically compiled or it is being plug and play, but it is changing. And I think from a design point of view, people need to understand that this discipline is changing, and it has changed, you know, every decade in the last 3, 4, 5 decades of what design was in the 1950s to what design has become now with digital and what design will become when, you know, digital moves from just the screen-based visuals to companions that you talk with. Right. And now insert your favorite quote from Her or your favorite scene from that movie. And I'm good to stop for now.
Well, I actually want to grab one from the Google I.O. keynote, which is material theme or material design theming, as they called it. Material design used to be a thing that came with guidelines.
Wait. I don't want to jump over to me. Are we done with the duplex?
No, I want to get
one more thing. Okay. I'm just making sure because I had one more question to ask you. So sorry. Go ahead.
No, the thing was you were talking about that visual design was kind of done, and they actually already showed that they are kind of done with it by providing a whole toolkit that opens up the visual design of material design to anybody who can just operate the application, because they allow you to customize the material design, the basic material design, by just adjusting some sliders and knobs and colors to make it into your own kind of look and feel for the application. So even Google is on board with chucking visual design out the door because there's other types of design to be done.
I love that. I love that support. And yeah, that I really want to look more into it. I don't really use Sketch much anymore, or if I ever did, mm-hmm. But I would be interested to look a little bit more into it. I want to come back to something that we talked about 10 minutes ago or so at the top of the conversation, which was, is it important that people know the difference between a computer and a human? And I just like, and this is something that I'm interested in as a designer. So I hope the designers who are listening to this are not rolling their eyes and they're not saying, oh, this is just as some sort of, you know, amorphous, abstract question that is, philosophical and about ethics. Because to me, if you are a designer worth anything, you are going to be asking these questions, because if you believe the answer is yes, then you should be the person working on the guidelines or the considerations of how you tell the difference. And yeah. For me, I'm not sure it's important if I know the difference. And we do another podcast called The Dark Side of Design. And maybe around in season one, around maybe 4 or 5 months ago, we had Bessie on. And Bessie's one of our amazing visual designers at Raft, to talk about her experience with Replica, which was a little sort of AI bot that was supposed to replicate you and your personality. And we got into the conversation of, does it matter if I am talking to Hus or if I'm talking to Husbot? Mm-hmm. Because in the end, maybe Husbot gives Hus a summary of everything that we've talked about. And therefore, when we meet, Hus already knows everything. You already know everything, right? So yep. Does that matter? And I don't know where you stand on this, your opinion. So there's my question to you.
I think I'm just going to go from the ethical point of view instead of any of the functional points of view, because I really think that is the other podcast. But let me give you an example. So I used to have an Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I talked to that, but recently I decided to plug it out. As you know, I can be a little bit paranoid, and with all of the revelations recently where your personal information goes, I was like, do I really need this thing? Nah, let's plug it out. What I find important there is that I had the ability to plug it out. But if Google calls me with a Google Duplex call and I do not know it is a computer, I can't even plug it out because I don't know that I'm talking to a device that is plugged in and that is actually fully recording the conversation and that is remembering everything I'm saying. And of course,
but let me push back on that, because I feel like with the Amazon Echo, it's a device in your house, mm-hmm. that you want to have a certain level of privacy, and therefore unplugging it is critical to maintaining that idea of privacy in your house. But when you get a phone call, to me, that's different, because your phone calls are already being recorded if a company calls you. So why do you feel that that's an invasion of privacy in the same way that a connected device in your home may be?
But then the company has told you that it's a company and that it's a company call. So if that has not been established, if it's just a hypothetical situation, remember the other part of the demo that Google was talking about, the ability to change Google Assistant's voice, and I believe they made it sound like John Legend. He could give you driving directions. So basically, if they can make it sound like anyone, they can make it sound human, and with the technology of Replica.ai, it could be sounding like me calling you. And I just think that from an ethical point of view, there's an issue there, because you would disclose things that you might not want to disclose to a party that is not that party. So it all goes back to the fact that it just feels like somebody is lying. That's the whole thing. It's just a gut reaction to the ability of a technology to lie to your face. That's all.
Well, so then what do you think about the technology that's been floating around, or not technology, but the videos where you see on YouTube, where I can get somebody to say anything, right? I can basically use software to have somebody's face change and look like they're speaking and saying something. Mm-hmm. Or some of, I know there was an article, I can't remember if it was on Recode, where people are doing such a good job of compositing fake faces into pornographic scenes. Like you're getting this question of what around me is real. And this goes much beyond the fake mm-hmm. news problem, which I think people may want to compare this to. This is, you know, what can I trust yeah. at this point? What can I trust? Who can I trust? And maybe that gets to a point of why trust is such a leverageable strategic asset for companies, because those companies who are trusted may have a better relationship with their customers, and those companies who are not trusted, well, are they actually ever telling me the truth?
Exactly. And it's a bit scary, right? Because now you're saying, I would trust a company or I would not trust a company. But then there's also things that if you get your news or your information or just even your entertainment through a single channel, there's most probably a kind of a filter bubble attached to that, right? Again, I think Google was trying to give a good example here with the new Google News, trying to show you all sides of a news story instead of just the side that you're used to. But even then, how does it select a news? So I really think that you're right. The trust in anything that comes through a digital line or anything multimedia is going to be a major selling point for any company in the future.
To the point of Elon Musk, that we are living in a simulation. Well, I don't know, you know, who knows if that's right or wrong, but everything around us seemingly will be simulated over the course of the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not we're living in a simulation. Maybe it's simply everything around us is simulated. Woohoo, creepy.
Exactly. We're not inside of a hologram, but what we see as reality is actually all kinds of things being simulated in front of our eyes, and that's what we believe to be true. There you go.
Whew, I just want
Dark Side of Design.
Okay.
Season 2.
I'm going to try to wrap this up very quickly. So, in summary, the Google I/O event showing the sort of automated call with the voice that was very clearly designed, as you said, with the ums, with the mm-hmms, all these ideas that make it sound more human. From a design perspective, these are things that designers are going to need to think about, to that idea. How mm-hmm. does this change as a discipline? How does design change as a discipline as these new products are rising up? And I actually think that's the good place to end. Other things? Last words? Good?
All good. I'm just curious to see what products come out of this. I'm really curious to see where it goes and to see good examples where we all can agree that it's actually a good idea.
Okay, well, to that extent, Chris, good talking to you. Trust nobody. Unplug all your devices and we'll talk next week.
Yeah, I'll go hide under a rock. Bye.
Later, man.